Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Today we're talking to Brigadier General Visser at the Department of Defense's Gender Conference under the theme Put Action Behind Words and Reflect the Belief of Embracing Gender Mainstreaming in the Department of Defense. General, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure and privilege.
Now, General, one of the most common remarks that I hear when you join the Air Force is that you can be sure there will be challenges, there will be rewards, and there'll be opportunities, and they will be the same whether you're male or female. With the exception of a few frontline combat roles, women have access to the same jobs, they've got access to the same pay, training, and promotion as men. Do you agree with the statement?
Yes, I agree with it. But I would like to say that it changed a lot over the past years, I would say from the late 80s. There was a lot of progress in this regard.
And can you tell us a little bit about that? Because as I understand, in terms of the achievement of gender ratios, this morning it was remarked that there's currently 29.8% target and the ideal is to get to 30%.
I would like to say that in some of the functional environments, we already achieved the targets. But in the environment such as air crew, pilots, navigators, flight engineers, there's obviously still a road to go to get to the desired targets.
And do you have any interventions, plans of action of how you're going to achieve those goals?
Well, that all happens through recruitment and aviation awareness programs where we start at school level. I'm also fortunate, if I may say, to be driving the aviation awareness programs for the Air Force. We start at very low grade, as low as grade 6, and we also use the air shows to promote aviation awareness. And obviously your target is young learners, girls and boys.
So it's a case of focusing at almost the point of market entry of aspiring and getting the youth excited about a career.
Absolutely, and where they also get there, we also have what we call Young Falcon Camps, where we use school holidays. And through the Department of Basic Education, we identify schools and particular learners who are focused on maths and science. And obviously, as I said, we start at the lower grade before they make their final choice of subjects to make sure that we encourage them to be good in maths and science, to be able to enter some of the musterings in the Air Force, being engineers, pilots, air traffic controllers.
And I think that's a really important point that you make in terms of that career progress. It's looking at what those building blocks are in order to get to your end goal.
That's exactly that, yeah. But I would like to add to this, because we are speaking on gender progress in this regard, and I was listening to the minister just now in her address, where I was thinking of the challenge that women have in a military environment, playing a dual role in most of the cases, being a mother, but also being a career woman. And we have examples where mothers, we've got an example of a female pilot who's expecting the second child. And obviously the Air Force is very committed to accommodate the situation of this dual role of many of our female partners.
And when you look at that dual role, is it from a flexibility point of view? If you could just elaborate in terms of how a woman manages to keep going with her career, developing and progressing, but still at the same time be able to attend to and raise her family.
Well, I haven't been in that situation because I never had children, but I'm looking at my female colleagues, and they do manage. They do manage through the flexibility we have with maternity leave and that type of thing, and we also, even for the fathers, we have also what they call family responsibility leave. So when mother goes to hospital and when the baby is born, the father also has family responsibility leave to be there close to her. And the other challenge that we can also sometimes have is when husband and wife are both in the military. That becomes a challenge sometimes when you have to transfer and we have to decide who's going to be the breadwinner, you know, whose career comes first. So, but I think in those cases, where we have a few such cases, they sort it out somehow to see how do we accommodate such a family, because they can be in different musterings as well. The one being a pilot maybe, the other one being a logistical officer.
That is a very interesting dilemma to be in terms of managing career progress with two family members who are committed to themselves and to the military on direction and routes. In my research for the show, I read a statement which said the best part about being in the Air Force is that no 2 days are the same. One moment, you're in officers. The next, you're doing exercises and operations or other exciting things that I don't think anyone in the civilian field would be able to comprehend. Can you share with us some of the interesting moments that have stayed with you in your life experiences during your career?
I have to start where I came from school to the Air Force. I was 17 years old when I joined in 1974. But to start, I didn't have any family that was somewhere in the military. In the matric, my year of matric or grade 12, I still had to decide what I want to do, but I knew I didn't want to have an ordinary job, with all due respect to mentioning teaching or nursing or being a secretary. I wanted something different. And I was almost on my way to Potchefstroom University to go and do a diploma in to become a librarian. And fortunately, somehow, at the time they started the college that was later called the Army, the Women's College in George, they started the college in 1971. And I heard about that at school, and at some stage I got invitation from the Air Force, application form to say we invite you to come for selection. Because at the time, things changed. And it was the first time where the National Defense Force started recruiting women for defense. That was when they started in 1971 for the first time after World War II.
So you were right there at the beginning of almost the next wave in terms of military recruitment for women.
I'm the last one left of a group of 33 ladies who did basic training in the Air Force, the first course presented to women after World War II, and I'm the only one left because I was the youngest.
And I read that you've had a continuous military career for 42 consecutive years.
That's correct, yeah, and as you just said earlier on, not 2 days the same, and that is what excited me about that. And also the challenges that went with it, because in my time, I would say even until integration in 1994, we didn't have mentors, female mentors in the Defence Force. We had some chauvinism, we had some experiences of sexual harassment and those things, and we had to manage that through other channels, which we did. So it was quite a challenge, but it's interesting to me to note, and the Minister made a note today, and I realized at some stage, on 9 August 56, when we had the big march to the Union Buildings, it was 2 months before my birth. Little did I know what that would mean for me many years later.
There's a lot of significance to that. Now, as this is a gender show, issues of sexual harassment or gender concerns within the workforce are important issues for women to contend with. Can you tell us how you dealt with some of those challenges?
Well, prior to 1994 and prior to the time when we started having, as I said, we were the first senior woman in the Air Force eventually. At the time, in 1974 when I joined, some of the ladies who completed their military training at the college in George joined the Air Force. So we had lance corporals at the time. But at the time, we had to revert to our regimental sergeant major's wife, for example. I'm talking about 76, 77. We didn't have the wonderful policies and regulations we're having today, and also the channels of reporting, because we do have a call center where you can report such cases. And we do have the policy on gender mainstreaming, gender equality, sexual misconduct in the broad, fraternization. We have a policy on all of those issues. So it really helps a lot to those ladies who are being confronted with such cases.
Policy is really an enabling factor. It helps from a point of view of making sure that you can do your work the way you want to be doing it and in the correct environment.
Quite right, yes, that's true. And I had experience recently where such cases were reported. We also had cases where at training institutions you might find instructors who would intimidate female students. And but there's also ways and means to handle that. As I said, we've got the policies and the reporting channels in place for that.
We'll be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Zonke Dikana, a South African Afro-soul musician, songwriter and producer. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance.
You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band, also available on DSTV Channel 902. Today we're talking to Brigadier General Visser of the South African Air Force. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. General, given your long tenure within the military space, you've seen a lot of transformation take place. Do you think that there are any jobs that women today are exempt from or can't do within the Air Force environment?
No, I'm totally convinced that the doors are open for them in the Air Force environment. I would even like to add a very recent example of the ejection seats for aircraft. We even have a project on the go now where they change ejection seats in the train all the aircraft to accommodate people with lighter weight. So that's why you also have the opportunity for females with a more tender build to also be accommodated in aircraft.
So we're seeing the issues go through not just from a personnel point of view, but also technological changes that are happening.
And I was thinking about when the minister spoke earlier on when they went to the Democratic Republic of Congo, and they had females that received the Oryx helicopter. Now we recently deployed our first female Mayotte commander, Mayotte meaning a mobile air operation team. So we deployed the first Mayotte female commander in the DRC.
So in terms of what the minister was talking about today, were they your recruits then that were receiving the Oryx helicopter?
I'm not 100% sure, but I would like to believe where there's Air Force aircraft flying, normally some of your support staff, your ground liaison officer, and your Mayotte team will be part of that deployment.
And talking about women's careers within the Air Force space, can you tell us, in terms of access to equal opportunities, access to promotion and expansion, and course training for women to expand their careers, is there equal opportunity and access?
Oh, yes, I can see no difference there. I've also been getting a little bit back onto my own career. I've been one of the first female directing staff or instructors at the Air Force College in 1984. And also, things also changed when I did my officer forming in 1981. We also didn't have any female instructors at the time. And I was listening to the minister now to say that we can do the same than the men, and we proved it there. Sometimes, you know, and you don't complain about the backaches and the sore ankles and those things afterwards because you want to be proud of what you achieved. You achieved it with your male partners or male colleagues.
And when you're operating in those environments and you're working through, it is going through and achieving and delivering on what you've done and proving that you are an equal to male counterparts.
And that's why I've brought this quote along that I would like to see to the listeners. That comes from a book that was based on Sun Tzu's Principles of War. And this book was written by a Taiwanese lady, Catherine Wong. And what you just said now made me think of the following. Achieving success as a woman doesn't necessarily mean beating men at their own game. Women can win and be successful on their own terms, using the natural abilities they already possess. So what I'm saying is women, and I'm talking about my younger generation, that might join the Defence Force or the Air Force, is you must take your challenges and turn it into opportunities. You should never sit back. If you're determined to make the military your career and to be a soldier first, then you have to follow that route. Take your challenges and turn it into opportunities. And it worked for me many a times. You want to go and sit and cry and sulk and feel sorry for yourself, but the next moment you say, but I want to be in the Defence Force. I want to do it for my country. So I will persevere and I will give the same output or performance than my male counterparts.
And you've just reminded me, in terms of what you're saying about the perseverance, the drive, one of the questions that I ask all my guests is about the factors that they feel have contributed to their success. So whether it's talking about hard work, whether it is about someone who's influenced you in your life, what would you say have been the key factors for your success thus far?
Well, if I must look at myself, my own personal, I think self-discipline for starters for me. And as I grew grew my career in the Defence Force or in the Air Force particularly, I just say to myself all the time, your opportunities is not going to stop. You must also develop yourself. You must, the culture of learning. If you get thrown into the deep end, into a new post, I must use myself as an example again. When I became an intelligence officer in 1982, it was still in the time of the Bush War, and I was put at an operational squadron, first helicopters and then later transport squadron. You had to go and study the enemy weaponry, the enemy aircraft. You had to be prepared to brief the pilots who's going into the next deployment to see what they're going to expect, their radar systems, etc. So you have to go and study to make sure that you can have the same level of experience and knowledge about the job that you're doing.
You're absolutely right. And learning is a lifelong process. And it seems that you are an advocate for education.
Absolutely. Yes, I found myself for the first time when I became the directing staff member at the Air Force College. I realized that training is so critical. And also, we know Madiba's famous quote on education, which means it's the most powerful tool to change the world. And it definitely worked for me. As I showed on my profile, is I've done several courses, and the one course that I've done at UNISA, I did at a very late stage. But I said to myself, this is not the end, and I was already a full colonel. It was not so long ago, and I went and I completed part-time. I completed my degree.
And one of your other interests seems to be about culture and military history, and when I talk about from a cultural point of view, I think that extends to diversity. How do you see your skills and aptitude for taking on elements of diversity and cultural richness being applied within your work environment?
Okay, I want to take it back to my own career again. I call it the privilege. I was placed there because of my post and position at the time, but I had the privilege to serve on the Integration Committee and the Integration Board when we integrated all the former forces in 1994. And the Defence Force presented a program at the time where you had a 3 or 4 day program where you sit in and you have dialogue on the background and cultures, not just cultures on African culture and Afrikaans culture, but military background. Our colleagues at the time, our comrades who were trained in Angola and Russia and other places, what did they see as military discipline, for example? How do they see you apply military discipline, for example, and how did they learn it? Because it was based on other doctrines. It wasn't based on South African doctrine. And I was so intrigued by that. And for me, it just made it clear for me that this country is a place for all of us, and this Defence Force is a place for all of us. And that's why I never, ever thought about leaving the Defence Force after integration. It never crossed my mind, and that's why I want to finish it in a bit more than a year from now, and at the age of 60, to say that I I would like to believe I left a legacy.
So in terms of next steps, this is the last few years within your career within the force, that it is about looking at your legacy on driving transformation.
Absolutely so, yes. And I also had the privilege, and currently I'm also responsible for foreign relations, to engage other defense forces and air forces.
Can you tell us a bit more about that, the countries that are involved, and take us through some of those experiences?
I think we've got, from a defense force point of view, let me speak Air Force. We've got, the world is open to us. The minister just spoke about our members that are trained in Cuba currently, the people that's on course there. We have excellent memorandums of agreement on government level with several countries, which normally cascades down into Air Force cooperation or defense cooperation. And for the Air Force, I just see good opportunities for us. It also helps our youngsters to get exposure to how other defense forces or air forces do their training in particular areas. It could be flying, it could be air traffic control, it could be protection services. So I think it's wonderful for us. And obviously the same, we also accommodate from our other air forces. We accommodate members on flying training courses and things like that.
It's great that we've got those international relations in place now, that the world is a smaller place and more sharing.
Yeah, that's true. And as I say, what we also experienced closer to South Africa is obviously our cooperation in the SADC environment. And also, what we also heard from the minister this morning is our females that are in posts, that's on in deployment, and that's also they also have key roles to play in this multinational or bilateral sometimes exercises that we have within the African continent.
I was quite intrigued about what the minister said today in terms of deployments that we have in Darfur, Sudan, as well as in the Democratic Republic of Congo, specifically in the eastern sector. And looking at today's conference, which, if I get the theme again, it is putting action behind words and reflecting the belief of embracing gender mainstreaming in the department. What for you would be the expected outcomes of the conference today?
I think transformation, in this case gender transformation, it remains a journey. You can never have an end state to say that we've got the perfect situation now. So as change comes along, as opportunities comes along, as I made examples now of external deployments and so on, obviously the policies and the approaches are being adapted to accommodate more women. I would also like to add something when you speak about deployments from reporting that we got is the help and the assistance that female soldiers give in a place like the DRC and Darfur to women and children of the local communities. Because sometimes if they are put under pressure with sexual harassment or, you know, by rebels and so on, they speak easily woman to woman, which didn't happen with male soldiers.
One of the things that I heard, which I think is fairly horrific, is how rape is used as a weapon in war.
That's definitely so, and that's where our female soldiers come in very well, I think, is to fill that gap where women, as I said, they feel more free and open to speak about the incidents or the things that happened to them.
So in terms of the role that women play, it's not just about the functional role in their work environment, but it's also filling in on the social element and the softer side.
Absolutely so, and I think our minister alluded to that as well, is that you can never take that away because we were created like that, to be a male and a female. But in the military, I do believe, 42 years down the line, I do believe that we are achieving great successes in terms of having a unified defense force equally served by males and females.
In general, looking at gender equality from more of a broader perspective, not necessarily within the military space. We spoke earlier about legislation that has been put in place to empower women to help guide them through their work environments. But increasingly, gender equality is a global focus. From a South African point of view, we've developed our Women Empowerment and Gender Equality Bill, which is currently under review. But its principal aim is about equal opportunity, equal representation, equal pay for the same job. What are your perspectives on gender equality? And do you think that 50-50 representation is achievable?
I think it is, but we must also be realistic in certain areas. I attended the conference last year as well. The minister alluded to training in the special forces today. There were challenges, particularly from a physical point of view, because there are some things. I mean, the body of a woman might not be able to pick up 200 kilograms of ammunition or a missile or something, whereas the male partner can do that. But that's why we do practical leadership in our training courses as well. I do believe that is where you, because obviously it's built on teamwork and it's built on group leadership, where obviously there will be roles that's more important or that's more applicable to the female, and other cases more for the male. So at the end of the day, it is teamwork. If you get into an operational situation, I do believe it becomes teamwork at the end of the day.
Can you tell us a bit more about the dynamics with the hierarchy? For instance, I've learned today that we've got several different ranks, that it's a very hierarchical institution within the military, but yet at the same time, there's elements of group leadership.
Yeah, that is true. As I said, and that is where this quote that I read to you now comes to play, is that we're different, but we're not really different in the military.
And it reminds me, I had an interview with the National Commission of Police, Ria Piecha, and she said that, exactly with the quote, that women and men are different. We've got different polarities. She said, I don't want to be a second-rate man. I want to be a first-rate woman.
Absolutely. That's why I say in your own right, you must exceed and prove yourself as an individual.
We'll be right back after this.
Hi, this is Lyra, South African Afro-soul singer and songwriter. You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amelia Malka on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy.
You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band, also available on DSTV Channel 902. Today, we're talking to Brigadier General Visser of the South African Air Force. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Now, moving forwards in terms of progressing, and you've had your vast experience, which areas do you think that we need to build on the most to benefit women in the future?
I think obviously in the operational environment, because women are many a time still seen to be in a support role. To be a technical officer at the base, to be a logistic officer, human resource officer. But there's still a way to go in some areas to see that the female fighter pilot or the female elephant tank driver can do the same job as the male partner. So I think we're getting there. But as I said earlier on, it remains a journey all the time.
And General, you have provided clear evidence today that you are a role model for women. And when you started in your career, there were no female role models. Can you tell us today, what advice would you give to girls who want to follow a career in your footsteps?
I think the first thing that I always tell all youngsters, having said that I'm involved in aviation awareness programs, is first, you must be prepared to be a soldier. You must be prepared to be a soldier the physical demands it takes from you, the military discipline and the self-discipline it takes from you. First and foremost, you must be prepared to be a soldier, otherwise you won't survive in this organization and you will not be having a fulfilling career.
And in terms of looking at, you say, from having a fulfilling career, you mentioned earlier that some of the criteria for learnerships and coming through was with their education, focus on maths, focus on science. Can you tell us what are some of the other elements that would be required for someone wanting to pursue a career? So what are those building blocks?
I think the one important thing that are being a part of criteria for selection or for a career in the Defence Force, in the broad Defence Force, is you must be medically fit. So, and even if you want to become a member of the air crew, and that includes air traffic controllers as well, eyesight and those things are critical. So you have to pass that, and then also the military or the psychological test that they go through, the air crew particularly, they have to pass those tests. That's being presented by the Military Psychological Institute.
General, do you consider that the opportunities that are available to people working within the military different to those that are offered by the civilian?
Oh, definitely so. As I say, I have a lot of family and friends that's working in the private sector and also in other government departments. But I want to first say that we must know, earlier on when I said first be a soldier, is the military is different. The Department of Defense is different to other departments. It's just a unique working environment. But the opportunities that crosses your way is just immense. I had opportunities to go on foreign visits, had opportunities to be a accompanying officer for foreign visitors. So many other opportunities I had to meet other prominent people and to be in work sessions with them, to be in conferences with them. But that's all from your own career and the posts that you filled at that moment in time that you ended up in this cases. But sometimes you have to also volunteer. You know, when you see opportunities, say to your general in charge or your officer commanding in charge, I would like to do that, or I'd like to do that for you, or I would like to take that opportunity. And many a times it worked. So what I want to get back to again, seek your own opportunities for development and growth.
So looking back, would you do it all over again if you had the choice of reliving your life?
Without any doubt, if I have to choose a career again, it will be the Air Force again.
And now, General, turning to some of your personal achievements or experiences, one of the things that I read was that you served on the planning committee of Madiba's funeral and the subsequent attendance of the funeral in Kounou. Can you share with us a little bit about that?
I think to start off, I think anybody that had a privilege of meeting Madiba, knowing the legacy that he left this country, the lessons of wisdom that he left for us, is I had the privilege of meeting him in 1995 when Polokwane was still called Pietersburg, and we had the first Freedom Day celebrations, and I was in charge of the team who was responsible for the decor of a aircraft hangar. We had to make that hangar look like a concert hall, you know, almost like a concert hall, carpets, the whole thing. So many years after that, that was the first time that I met him. I had a few words with him. And when we started the planning for his funeral, obviously we were a very a big integrated team because there's a lot of aspects to take care of. But the most unexpected thing that came upon my career that I will never forget, I will always cherish that, is on the morning of the funeral, I was on duty at Air Force Base Waterkloof. And to cut a long story short, Reverend Jesse Jackson was on the airport. There was some misunderstanding with his flight booking to Umtata, and I accompanied Reverend Jackson to Umtata, so I had the wonderful opportunity to be in Kounou for the funeral and to meet Reverend Jesse Jackson the one and only Reverend Jackson. So it was a privilege for me to be at the funeral and to experience that whole procedure in Kunu. I will forever cherish that, and I will forever cherish the medal that I received for the work that we've done there.
I think those, as you said, those are memories that cannot be replaced, and they will be cherished. Now, General, we're coming to the end of our show. Can I ask you, in closing, if you could please share a few words of inspiration to pass out to our young ladies and girls listening on the continent?
I think if I must do it in broad, not just Defence Force, I must say there is a place for everyone on this earth, and there's a role to play for everyone, whether you choose the military, whether you choose an academic role or anything out in business. For me, once again, as I said earlier on in the quotation that I used, we're not competing. We are not, as females, competing with men. We want to achieve our goals in life, whether it's career, whether it's personal life. You want to achieve it from your own abilities. And I want to make another example. Long time ago, I applied for an attaché post. And one of the females on the selection board, a female colonel, asked me, would you like to be selected today based on your gender or based on your competency? I said, definitely not on my gender. I would like to be seen to be competent and to have the right profile to become an attaché. That was my answer. So, as I said, as a woman, you can have your own achievements in your career, and you can run shoulder to shoulder with your male counterparts.
I think those are very powerful, motivating words. Thank you very much for joining us today.
I thank you.
And we look forward to hearing about the last elements in terms of the latter part of your career with the legacy you leave behind on driving transformation within the Defence Force.
Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance. And we have been talking to Brigadier General Visser of the South African Air Force.